Conference, you'll learn from the experts in decriminalization and legalization, including seminars on women, cannabis, and respect, lessons from alcohol prohibition, high times cannabis cultivation.
The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
Well, on the earth.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Monday, August 2nd, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Coming to you from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Portland, Oregon, home of the 2010 Normal National Conference. Also joining me here, steering the ship of the show, the pirate himself, Ganja John.
Thar be pirates here.
Arr. Well, it's a special day, John. You got to show off on the cam the new patch.
New marijuana leaf eye patch.
Leather.
Custom made. Yeah.
Leather custom made marijuana leaf eye patch. If that don't represent, I don't know what does. It's beautiful. We love it.
You guys can come out and see it at Seattle Hemp Fest this year.
That's right. We are 19 days away from Seattle Hemp Fest. Glad you brought it up. It's always on the third weekend of August. This year, that puts that on the 21st and 22nd. We will be there covering the Normal booth. Ganja John, myself, and a few people from Washington Normal and Oregon Normal. We'll be running the National Normal booth right next door to High Times. Alan St. Pierre and Keith Straub won't be coming out from Washington, D.C. this year, so it's all on us. We'll be streaming live, Normal Show Live, all day, both Saturday and Sunday, both from the Normal booth and backstage and on stage when those of us that are speaking give our various performances. So please check that out. Seattle Hemp Fest, hempfest.org for more information. Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, the home of the 4 degree different day. Days, Cannabis Carrie.
Carrie.
Hello, Carrie. Can you hear us? Oh, goodness. We can't hear Carrie. All right. We've got some problems with the studio right now. We'll get that figured out and get Carrie on the line. She joins us for our hemp headlines right after the first break. And so we'll get the latest going on in news and information for the cannabis community. Also, Carrie takes care of our Roots Monday Daily Toker Tunes. She's bringing us today a great blues tune, Truck Driver Blues, from Asleep at the Wheel, featuring Normal favorite Willie Nelson. And at the bottom of the hour, 30 past, we'll be talking to Alan St. Pierre from Washington, D.C. He'll be giving us the latest information on the Normal National Conference, as well as initiatives to legalize medical marijuana in Arizona and South Dakota and dispensaries in the state of Oregon. All of that coming up at the half past mark in our This Month in Normal segment. And at the end of the show, a radical rant. Ryan Grimm from Huffington Post has released the latest polling information on Prop 19 that has Democrats giddy at the notion that cannabis-supporting voters would help their chances for election in 2010. I'll take a look at those numbers and give you my analysis in the radical rant. All that and more coming up on today's Normal Daily Audio Stash and the Normal Show Live. Daily Audio Stash available through iTunes. That's our podcast. You can get it at stash.normal.org. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
The war on drugs has been a sort of failure, and I think that we need to rethink and reform the laws.
Extend your visit through Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the free two-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just Say Now. The NORML National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon. Details available on the web at normal.org/conference or by calling 202-483-5500. And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly. I said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
Michael Phelps, Olympic superstar, 14 gold medals, world record holder. Bomb smoker. So much for that amotivational syndrome.
To admit to having used marijuana in the past. And they want us to go around and ask each of you. Senator Kerry? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Senator Edwards?
Yes.
Senator Lieber?
I have a reputation for giving unpopular answers at Democratic debates. I never used marijuana. Sorry.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Senator.
Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine. Smoke a little pot, drink a little wine. Everything will be just fine.
Do you want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name, just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Liberate your mind, liberate your mind. Liberate your mind, liberate your mind. That's what you got to do.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that.
Hello.
But
Welcome.
Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Narnal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm going to light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm going to blow away troubles from my head. I'm going to leave this plastic place to your plastic jubilees. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
This is Narnal Show Live.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
Providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
Right. I don't care what you say. That ain't right. I said, that ain't right. That ain't right. I don't care what you say.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Narnal News with Cannabis Carry.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 12 after the hour, and after much frantic attempts, we are unable to get Carrie on the line. Our Skype is working just fine. You may have heard the Skype call testing service that we were testing, and we're hearing that okay. So everything seems to be okay here in the studio. There must be something going on Carrie's mic up there. We will continue to work on that throughout the show. In the meantime, I'm going to take this chance to bring you some of the news coming up here from NORML, National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And the first story we have here has to do with medical marijuana initiatives that are being proposed on the ballots in Arizona and South Dakota. This is great news coming from both of these states. Arizona's medical marijuana initiative is being pushed by Arizona Medical Marijuana Policy Project. You can find them on the web. And South Dakota also has a medical marijuana bill. South Dakota's for Compassionate Access is their website. Now, there's also a group working in Texas to bring dispensaries to that state. With its recognition by the state of Texas as a nonprofit, the Medicinal Marijuana Advocates Group, a new group in Texas, says the fight to bring medical cannabis legislation to Texas is getting closer to reality. MMAG, recently founded to advocate peaceful protest for pharmaceutical research, brings motivation and passion to the struggle, according to Alexander Young, president and founder of the group. We expect strong opposition from disbelievers, Young said. It's inevitable in such a conservative atmosphere. We knew this when we started and we're ready for a struggle, but it's time to end needless suffering, Young said. It's trying to bring centralization and a single clear professional voice to the medicinal cannabis community, said Tim DeGow, public relations director for MMAG. Good news to hear coming from Texas.
We're getting there.
Interesting story here, coming out of Saginaw, Michigan. The DEA returned $62 in cash seized in marijuana grow room raid. Medical marijuana patient and provider Edwin W. Boyke hoped he was going to get his guns and grow equipment back when 2 days after the Saginaw County Sheriff's Department returned his TV, he was asked to return to the Drug Enforcement Administration office in Saginaw, Michigan. But when Boyke arrived at the DEA offices Friday afternoon, he said an agent told him the guns and other items, including grow equipment, quote, would be retained as possible evidence, end quote, in an ongoing federal investigation into whether Boyke violated drug laws by growing and possessing harvested marijuana and plants inside his home. The DEA agent handed Boyke $62 in cash that was taken from Boyke's wallet during the raid and wished him a good day. Quote, they called me and said, come pick up my stuff, said they had it, that they were through with it, Boyke said. It sounded like he was going to give me everything, he said, reports Gus Burns of the Saginaw News. Boyke, a legal registered patient who smokes marijuana to ease back pain caused by a pinched nerve, hoped to recover his four guns, three hunting rifles, and an antique inoperable Russian gun, which he said Saginaw deputies seized from his Saginaw Township home while a DEA-secured search warrant was being served on April 15th. Well, once again, this story out of Saginaw shows how law enforcement, you know, for so long when we've been trying to pass reforms in marijuana laws, they have said, well, we don't make the laws, we just enforce them, right? We don't make the laws, we just enforce them. But when we come out and make a law, when we the people, in this case in Michigan, come out and make a law, it seems like those agents and those officers aren't so fond of enforcing that law. Now, of course, this is the DEA that doesn't care at all what the people of Michigan might think about medical marijuana, but it's also the Saginaw County Sheriff that was involved in this as well. And this should frighten anyone that a man, this Edwin Boyke, and I'm looking at the picture of the man, he's 64 years old, he obviously a man who's not any threat to anyone, but it's got to scare everyone the fact that the DEA took cash from his wallet as part of the raid, as if the $62 this man was holding was somehow tainted drug money as part of some big buy he was going to do. $62 out of a man's wallet. And furthermore, this keeping the man's firearms, three hunting rifles, and an antique Russian gun. When you're talking about Michigan, you're talking about people who love their Second Amendment and they love the right to be able to hunt. And this is another way that the war on drugs continues to infringe upon our civil liberties. The Supreme Court has decided we have a Second Amendment right to personally bear arms. And who needs that more than a frail 62-year-old medical marijuana patient, perhaps to protect himself from people who would engage in some sort of home invasion robbery, perhaps. These are the people that we're taking the guns away from. It makes no sense whatsoever. Do Mr. Boyke right. Give him his guns and his equipment back. In one of our stupid stoner stories here for the day, we have a gamer teen who accidentally leads cops to his parents' pot farm. Police traced an Illinois teen to his home after he allegedly stole credit cards and used them to play internet games. When police entered the home, they stumbled upon his parents' marijuana growing operation and arrested them as well. Authorities had been investigating multiple fraudulent online orders and downloads resulting from a Lincolnshire, Illinois car burglary in July. In that case, the victim's credit card was taken from his vehicle, reports Frank Abderholden of the Lake County News Sun. Oh, man. Okay, look, guys, don't be stealing credit cards. And parents, pay attention to what your kids are doing with their credit cards, lest they lead the cops right onto your pot farm. The truth is coming out about Americans seeing alcohol and tobacco as riskier than marijuana. Americans view alcohol and cigarettes as more dangerous than marijuana. Tellingly, even a majority of adults who drink alcohol rate it as riskier than pot. Those who never drink alcohol are more evenly divided. A new Rasmussen Reports telephone survey released this week found that a scant 17% of American adults rate the use of marijuana as riskier than drinking alcohol. 50% say alcohol is more dangerous, while 26% rate the two as equally risky. Similarly, 46% say smoking cigarettes is more dangerous than smoking pot. 24% disagree, saying that marijuana is more dangerous than tobacco. 1 in 4, 25%, say tobacco and alcohol are equally dangerous. Now, this is from Rasmussen Reports, a telephone survey, and although progress is being made in adults not seeing alcohol as a dangerous drug, there's still a disquieting amount of disinformation and misunderstanding around the issue. Think about it. Since marijuana has never caused a single overdose death in history, whereas alcohol causes about 50,000 deaths a year and tobacco about 450,000 deaths annually, and since both legal substances are physically and mentally addictive, but marijuana has virtually no withdrawal symptoms, then wouldn't close to 100% of a reasonably well-informed public see alcohol and tobacco as far riskier than pot? It also seems that some Americans haven't learned the lessons of the folly of prohibition. 26% of adults say smoking cigarettes should be outlawed, while 42% think marijuana should remain illegal. Interesting numbers, and I want to give thanks to Steve Nelson and the website tokeofthetown.com for our news headlines today. Great information out there. Tokeofthetown.com. Steve Elliott, great work you're doing out there. Thanks so much from Normal. Oh, my goodness, it's time for a well-deserved break.
Well-deserved break.
Oh, I hate it when we get the technical gremlins, but we'll get them all worked out. Your Daily Toker Tunes for Roots Monday coming up next.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez. Oh,
cannabinoids.
What a gift. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Fire it up. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Bully boys are mad. Play more, play more if you can. You're looking for that dope weed. Normal Show Live will bring you exclusive live coverage of Seattle Hemp Fest on the third weekend of August. You'll probably remember more of it than those of us attending.
Today I was walking down the street, to my surprise.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by Cannabis Carry in Astoria, Oregon, and CannabisFantastic.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, it is 22 after the hour. We've cast some spells. We've waved a magic wand. And to the miracle of miracles, Cannabis Carry from Astoria, welcome back.
Here I am, everyone.
Yay!
Russ, good job. Good job on covering the news. You did an excellent job there with no preparation. I love it.
Oh, that's all the thanks go out to Steve Elliott and Toke of the Town. I just scrambled and tried to find what I knew would be a good, brief, reliable source of news, and Steve's always got some good stories up.
He is great. Will he be at the convention, do you know? Because I'm a big fan of Steve Elliott myself.
I will have to find out. I'm not sure. I know he's out of Massachusetts, I believe, so we'll have to find out if he makes it across
country. Well, we should send him a formal invitation. He's great.
Absolutely. Well, we're glad to have you back, Carrie. And we were just up there yesterday. We had a good time for Cousin Kenny's birthday. And you had a typically, gray and cold August day there to start the summer. What's up with your weather up there?
You know what? I just asked nature to put me in the most perfect place, and it just has. I love this kind of weather.
It was like 54 for a low and 59 for a high. You know, great.
Yeah, and you guys were playing music out on the deck, so that was pretty good.
We had a good time. Myself, Cousin Kenny, his mom Asha, and your boyfriend Terry, we all got out the instruments and jammed out there on the deck overlooking the beautiful view of the mouth of the Columbia River and the bridge that connects Oregon to Washington. It was wonderful. So thanks so much for having us up there, Gary.
It's always nice when you guys come up. Ganja John, you better come up next time.
I will. I actually spent all day sleeping. I slept until 5 o'clock. You guys woke me up and asked me if I wanted to go, and I said, no, I'm going to chill here. I fell asleep on my couch. I woke up at 5 p.m.
That's
remarkable. That's what happens when you smoke pot all day at the Cannabis Cafe.
Yeah, the Cannabis Cafe grand opening on Saturday. We were out there. It was a lot of fun. And we will be doing our show there live on Friday, so you can see the inside. They hadn't had the hardwire internet set up yet, so we couldn't get a wireless signal down there for the grand opening. But this Friday, we'll do our show from Cannabis Cafe. You'll get to see the 4,000-square-foot goodness, this wonderful, wonderful place.
The beautiful, beautiful former wine bar.
That's right. Well, let's get to the music here. Cannabis Carry has our Roots Monday music, the best of jazz, blues, country, folk, and sometimes Mexican folk tunes and Greek folk tunes, all sorts of great stuff. What's on tap today?
Well, today I'm thrilled. We're going to welcome back Asleep at the Wheel. Now, for those of you that aren't country swing fans, Asleep at the Wheel has been around since the 70s with their country swing sound. They've won 9 Grammy Awards and have released more than 20 studio albums. They began their climb up the ladder of success with help from 2 very well-established artists. Back in 1973, Van Morrison, who met them when they opened for a Hot Tuna concert, mentioned them in a Rolling Stones magazine article, and that recognition led to a record deal with United Artists. Then in 1974, at the request of Willie Nelson, the band moved from Oakland, California to Austin, Texas. So over the next few decades, Asleep at the Wheel sound became the standard for Texas country swing. They have been guests on the PBS series Austin City Limits, a record setting 10 times, and have been named as the best country western band by Rolling Stone magazine. They've played with almost every country music great over the last 4 decades, and in February of 2009, frontman Ray Benson collaborated with Willie Nelson to release his album, Willie and the Wheel, an album that we featured here on The Stash back in December. The album was nominated for a 2010 Grammy Award for Best Americana Album. Now, this latest offering from the country music's great, the album is called It's a Good Day. It was just released, like within the last few weeks, and it has 2 tracks on their newest album that also feature Willie Nelson. Willie is on our Normal Advisory Board. He's worked for cannabis legalization for years, and he seems to be the one guy that has been able to share his love of herb with the masses and yet remain loved by fans, including those that might never have considered marijuana as more than an illegal street drug. I'm really proud to offer the latest Asleep at the Wheel single. It's called Truck Driver Blues, with the most recent of Willie Nelson's music to hit the airwaves.
All right, great. This is Asleep at the Wheel featuring Willie Nelson with the Truck Driver Blues.
To my shoes, feeling tired and weary from my head down to my shoes. Got a low down feeling, truck driver's blues.
Keep the wheels rolling, ain't got no time to lose. Keep the wheels rolling, I ain't got no time to lose. I got a low down feeling, truck driver's blues. Did have nothing, I got nothing much to lose.
Never did have nothing, I got nothing much to lose.
Got a low down feeling, truck driver's blues.
I got nothing much to lose.
Never did have nothing. I've got nothing much to lose. Just a low down feeling. Truck driver's blues. Just a low down feeling.
Truck driver's blues.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Founded in 1970, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is the oldest, largest, and most popular lobby of cannabis users in the world. From our Washington, D.C. offices, we lobby our federal government. And from our chapters nationwide, we lobby our state and local governments to end the war on American citizens who choose to use cannabis responsibly. We take you now to our nation's capital for a visit with Executive Director Alan St. Pierre and a look at this month in Normal.
Welcome back. 32 after the hour, and we are excited to have joining us from Washington, D.C., Alan St. Pierre, the Executive Director of Normal. We're still working on getting his connection hooked up here. We are promoting the 2010 Normal National Conference, which is taking place in Portland, Oregon, at the beautiful Governor's Hotel. And you can get more information on that at normal.org/conference. And it's real important to act now because early bird pricing is still in effect, I believe, until middle of August, August 14th. Or 15th, where you can get discounts on what the eventual price will be. Also, we've announced to our chapter leaders that we have a special discount code for those members of Normal chapters that are going to be coming to the national conference. If they're bringing five or more, you'll be able to apply for this code, which I believe gives you 20 or 25% discount on Normal National Conference. It's happening September 9th through the 11th. That's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it's kind of interesting how we've got everything put together. The Thursday and Friday days are one package, and the Saturday is a medical cannabis only day that we're putting together, and you can go to both or either one of those. So if you want to go Thursday, Friday, that's great. You want to go Saturday, that's great. Or you can get the combination package for all three. Now, the Governor's Hotel has been sold out for a while now. We have a couple of sister hotels, the Avalon and the Red Lion Hotel, that are helping us out, getting the excess people there to stay in those hotels. I know a lot of people from the Normal Show Live chat are showing up. We've already got Rolla J's room taken care of and a few others I know that are ready to go. We're going to the phone now to Washington, D.C., and Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Alan, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Russ.
I was just filling everybody in on the nuts and bolts details of the conference. You know, Thursday through Saturday, there's two different packages, the two-day or the three-day or the one-day package. Can you give us a little idea of the content of the conference this year, some of the special guests coming and some of the panels that people will learn from?
Well, as you were indicating, it's definitely broken up, as it has been the last two or three years, into a two-tier system where the first 2 days really look at legalization, decriminalization, the health effects from using cannabis, sort of more general information. The last day, Saturday the 11th, is definitely a medical cannabis-only day. The effects of medical cannabis, the business of medical cannabis, the politics of medical cannabis, the law. So we will be looking at all aspects, but for those who only want to concentrate on medical cannabis, Saturday would be their day.
Oh, excellent. And how about some of the topics, some of the speakers that are going to be there for the event that people can look forward to?
Sure. Well, the theme for this year is Just Say Now, the case for legalizing and taxing cannabis. We always do a big political legislative roundup about what's happened in the last year and what's likely going to be happening in the ensuing year. We have a panel this year put on by the Normal Women's Alliance, which really looks at the role of women and, in my view, the over-sexualization of women in the law reform movement. Lessons from the Dry Decade, former Normal board member Richard Evans, a prominent attorney from Western Massachusetts, will be giving a lecture using Daniel O'Krent's new book on alcohol prohibition to really drive home to reformers in a really cool PowerPoint presentation about all the different things that happened under alcohol prohibition, how it came to be reformed, and the clear lessons that we as cannabis law reformers can take from that. And when it gets down to the medical marijuana day, we're going to be looking at things like marijuana for mental health, its use in schizophrenia, PTSD, bipolarity, the abuse of it. We'll be looking at whether or not and how the marijuana and the medicalization and legalization camps can work together, if at all. And lastly, I think one of the best panels we'll have, and it's probably worth the price of admission alone, is a panel of experts, the proverbial everything you wanted to ask about marijuana but had been afraid to ask or didn't know who to ask. This panel will be populated with the brightest individuals across the entire spectrum, from law to medical research to sociology to history to communications to computers. If you've got a question, this panel can answer it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. September 9th through 11th. Check out normal.org/conference for all of the details. Now let's talk a little bit about what's happening now, and specifically in your neck of the woods. The District of Columbia is moving forward with medical marijuana. However, it doesn't seem to be turning out the way the voters had originally intended the medical marijuana initiative. What's the latest on the city there, the city council, dispensaries, and medical marijuana in D.C.?
Well, you're absolutely right to set it up as the voters, myself included, in 1998, who voted for medical cannabis. This isn't at all what we voted for. Not only did we vote for having the ability to grow our own at home, now what do we have? We will not have these laws go into effect at least until January 2011. That's when the regulatory agencies will be empowered to make permits and to issue the final guidelines, et cetera, which means, frankly speaking, we're probably pushing this till mid-year 2011 before somebody could actually open up a dispensary and sell medical cannabis. The law only took effect officially about a week ago in terms of the congressional oversight period ending. Friday of last week, it was made known that the regulations were going to be coming out soon. We have had them leaked to us here at Normal. They will be coming out this Friday, the 6th. And without going into any detail in advance of this presentation that will be made by the mayor's office on Friday, it's going to be controversial. It's not going to be at all what the voters voted for. It is going to be opposed by some of the staunchest supporters of marijuana law reform, most notably the AIDS and public health community here in D.C. And to remind listeners that about 1 out of 22 residents in the District of Columbia has AIDS. So it's a very, very potent political lobby, and this Friday we're going to get the regulations finally made public, though those of us on the staff already know this is going to be a firestorm that's going to kick off.
What is it about the governance of D.C. that allows this to happen, where an initiative is passed that gives people the right to grow their own and to have as much supply as needed without interrupting their medical treatment? How does it go from that through the sausage factory to turn out to what we're getting now? Isn't there some way activists, those of us on our side who voted for the better initiative, to get what we actually voted for?
Good question. Of course, the District of Columbia is like no other political entity in the United States. It's not a state, It's not a territory. So when we, the citizens, voted in 1998 to make medical marijuana available, as you stated, for not only to grow your own, but for a fairly wide and broad range of disease types, et cetera, it's a long and tortured 12 years,
yeah.
because I can distill it as quickly as I can. Essentially, after the citizens voted for it and we picked up the paper the next day, did we know the vote total? Hell no. It took months and months and thousands of dollars of litigation to sue the District of Columbia to find out actually what the vote total even was. This is such an uber political topic, Russ, in America, that even in the United States, the Clinton administration joined along with then Representative Bob Barr, the chief prosecutor, against him in the House, trying to take him down as president, metaphorically join arms and go into the courtroom to argue that in the District of Columbia, the seat of the United States government, the birthplace of genuine democratic representative democracy, that a vote could not even be counted. Well, after the judge's eyes rolled around his head 1,000 times, he basically ruled in favor that for spending, if reformers would spend $1.75, donate that to the District of Columbia, that's what it would cost to push the button on the Excel spreadsheet to determine that 69% of the district voters, myself included, of course, voted for medical cannabis. And so we knew, all of us as organizers of that, that if the Congress really wanted to stiff the District of Columbia and not allow them to implement it like they do all kinds of other things the Congress doesn't like, they could well do so. And we knew that was going to happen. But we never thought we weren't going to be able to count the effing vote. So we did count the vote, and the Republicans did prevail from 1998 through 2006. So the two stars that aligned to make this conversation happen, Russ, is that the Democrats took over in 2006 with Mrs. Pelosi as Speaker, and Mr. Obama was elected in 2008. And so they have basically now been able to make this happen by allowing the District of Columbia to bring this forward. Now, how did it come out to be this level of sausage making? The District of Columbia has the ability to take these initiatives and pass rules and regulations and lawmaking, sort of take the initiative as a sketch more than a golden rule. And with that, that's how we've come to this day, where the rules are going to be so much different one than what the voters voted for. It's not clear we have a lot of good path to litigation here, though I suspect as a layperson we do. But the District of Columbia, starting Friday, is going to take on an entirely new controversial role in medical marijuana discussion because of the way they're about to try to do this. And I don't want to give away the punchline, because Friday afternoon, many of us will be interested in what the district government chose to do in trying to implement this.
Yeah, I know when SB 420 passed in California, there was a lot of discussion about the intent of the voters with Prop 215 and how the California Assembly couldn't undo what the voters intended through initiative. Apparently, that's not the case in D.C. D.C. can pretty much do what it wants with an initiative.
It largely can. I think a way to expedite this and make this functional is that if this completely falls apart in the next year and a half, and the rules are so restrictive that the law is moot, then we will come back, pass another initiative, make it absolutely clear what the intention of the voters are and what the law should be. And under this administration, both here at the local level and all the way up to Congress and the executive branch, then that should move us forward if we can't accomplish it under the 1998 initiative.
Mm-hmm. Okay, looking past D.C., coming up to the forthcoming election, that we've got three states with medical marijuana initiatives under consideration, state of Arizona and South Dakota looking at medical marijuana, both of which have tried before. Arizona, you know, passed but failed because of the wording, and South Dakota's being the only initiative that actually failed to win on medical marijuana, and plus Oregon with an initiative mm-hmm. to legalize medical marijuana dispensaries. Any new updates on those three and how the prospects look for passing in any of them?
Oregon's is too new to get any greater read than has already been publicly talked about, which is it would appear that it's going to better than not favor a passing, though all this stuff gets tighter. We don't have any opponents, as far as we know, really publicly outspending money against it. If that happens in the next 60 to 90 days, then we will certainly see the consequences of that. The other two states, South Dakota and Arizona, Arizona first, fait accompli, absolutely will pass, just like it did in 1996-1998. The attorney general who's currently running for governor, Mr. Goddard, generally supports this premise. There has been changes in law in Arizona since that period of time that make it much harder for the legislature to nullify the will of the voters like they largely did in 96 and 98. So I think Arizona, that should pass and should be implemented without too much political concern. South Dakota, I think it will pass this time. It will probably pass somewhere between 52 and 53%. And not a lot of money spent because of the nature of the media buys up there, the very sparse population. It, as you mentioned earlier, just barely lost the first time out of the gate. The issue of medical marijuana has been even more vetted and better so in the United States since then. It could fail, but I would be really, really surprised if it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really good
news. And again, in Oregon, I think, I think that, again, we have a couple of weeks and months to see the narratives come into the clarity here. And I'm sure just like at the onset now, just like in the 1990s, major mainstream publications and media outlets like the TV stations there and the Oregonian will, you know, use their ability to try to influence to be against it. But I think the citizens will largely be in favor of it and pass this. And if they do, then that will further institutionalize medical cannabis to a degree in Oregon and probably make it look similar to what we're about to see in Colorado. Colorado, oddly, already has a multi-hundred million dollar medical marijuana business well underway. Now the governor has signed bills to pass legislation that within a year will probably likely half the number of the dispensaries in the state, but they'll be legal and taxed and fully regulated. And for many of us, we would think of that as progress. So in some ways, Oregon and Colorado are on very similar tracks.
Hmm. It's exciting to think that by the end of this November election, with D.C. counted, we will have one-third of the United States and D.C. with medical marijuana laws and California perhaps legalizing outright. It's an exciting time to be involved in reform, isn't it, Alan?
Well, if you have to look at a 40-year continuum, if you're just coming to this now, you are so lucky. And if you've been doing this for as long as many of us have, then you too would have to appreciate these massive changes that are underway. And not whistle by the graveyard, realize we're about halfway through this.
That's right. Alan St. Pierre is the Executive Director of Normal and the Normal Foundation, joining us by telephone from Washington, D.C. Thanks so much for some of your time, Alan.
My pleasure. Enjoy. Take care, Russ. Take care.
All right, Radical Rant coming up next. This is Normal Show Live. Also, don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at Radical Russ. Follow Ganja John at Ganja J-O-N, no H.
My mic doesn't work, but no H in Ganja John.
We'll see you after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hi, this is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. This year, the Drug Czar's office has a $60 million budget for advertising their Reefer Madness propaganda. We here at Normal don't have that kind of money, but we've got two weapons for fighting back. Your donations and the truth. Please, make a donation to Normal so we can continue to expand this podcast and our other media campaigns. Even a donation of $4.20 can help. Visit us on the web at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL, N-O-R-M-L. Thank you for caring and sharing.
Give me the weed, that's what I need. When I smoke it, satisfaction.
You want answers? I was mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Hey everybody, 50 after the hour. Good to be back for the beginning of August here at Normal Show Live. And I want to start it off with a rant on some information published today in the Huffington Post. A great article by Ryan Grimm, who's one of their primary reporters at Huffington Post, also the author of This Is Your Country on Drugs, a fantastic look at the history of just all drugs in America and some really astonishing things to learn in that. But Ryan Grimm brings up this notion that's going around political circles right now that marijuana legalization being on the ballot, specifically in California with Prop 19, but also those medical marijuana ballots with Arizona, South Dakota, and Oregon, that these initiatives will be for Democrats what the anti-gay marriage equality amendments were for Republicans, the kind of turn out the base social wedge issue that helps their candidates get on the ballot. This is what Ryan writes in Huffington Post, quote, a survey making the rounds among strategists, which has yet to be made public, indicates that pot could be just the enticement many voters need. Surge voters, the voters who came out for Obama in 2008, single women under 40, and Hispanics, all told America Votes pollsters that if legalization were on the Colorado ballot, they'd be more likely to come out and vote. 45% of surge voters and 47% of single women said they'd be more interested in voting if the question of marijuana legalization was on the ballot. Most of these were energetic, with 36 and 30% respectively saying they'd be much more interested in coming out to vote. Roughly half said it would make no difference. For Latinos, 32% said they'd be much more interested in voting, and another 12% said they'd be somewhat more attracted to the idea of turning to the polls. Surge voters said they would support a marijuana legalization measure by a margin of 63-35. Young single women would back at 68-31. Latinos, meanwhile, oppose it 52-46, according to the survey. According to a Colorado Democratic operative, quote, whether it can pass or not is another question, but I think it's clear that a marijuana legalization measure has the potential to increase turnout among voting groups that are critical to Democratic success in November, end quote. Of course, the operative preferred to remain anonymous, highlighting the difficulty Democrats will have in threading the political needle. Grimm goes on to conclude, turning out an extra few percent can be the difference between winning and losing in swing states, a reality that Karl Rove exploited in 2004 by papering the nation with anti-gay marriage initiatives. It's an interesting theory, this idea that young female minority voters would come out for marijuana legalization, and then since they're there, they're the people who are more likely to vote Democratic in an election. That is a very viable theory, and I think it has some merit to a point, because I think the Democrats are in for a big surprise here when it comes to the cannabis community. The difference between the whole Karl Rove anti-gay marriage initiative thing in 2004 is that Karl Rove and the Republicans actually believed in it, right? They supported the anti-gay marriage equality amendments. They said things like one man, one woman, and their candidates down ticket all echoed that same sort of, you know, save the country, protect marriage frame that they had put this issue into. When you look at the Democratic Party, what do they have to offer that voter who comes out for marijuana legalization? Unlike Rove and the Republicans, the Democrats don't really believe in legalization. At least they're afraid to say so publicly. Senator Boxer, Senator Feinstein, both California senators, both Democrats, both publicly opposed to marijuana legalization through Prop 19. Senator Feinstein, really? A former mayor of San Francisco? Really?
Bum, bum,
no kidding. And Jerry Brown, the Democratic governor hopeful, the current attorney general. Back when he was governor of California, they used to call him Governor Moonbeam because of his association with the counterculture. And he was famously interviewed in various magazines. He was going out with Linda Ronstadt. He was smoking weed. There's so many people out there who smoked weed with Jerry Brown. And yet he wants to come out and publicly oppose Prop 19. And even when the Democrats can muster up some courage here to talk about marijuana legalization, the only frame they've put it in so far is the revenue frame, that we could tax cannabis and help the revenue for our cities or for our state, which may be true. But it's kind of a ghoulish frame to get votes out of, isn't it? It's kind of like saying, well, it doesn't matter if it hurts people or if it hurts society. If we can make money off it, we can. I mean, how easy would it be for Republicans to say, well, if legalizing crack would raise tax money, would you do that? Well, that's the exact way you could tear that down. It's kind of a cynical ploy to rely on the tax revenue. And besides, what if the economic incentive goes away, right? What if the economy gets better? Then we continue locking people up for using a plant? No, Democrats should get behind this because it's the right thing to do. They should embrace it on the racial aspect alone as to how racist our marijuana enforcement is. They should embrace it on the fact that it is unfair to labor. It is unfair to workers who lose their jobs when they are not impaired on the job, but merely because they might have chosen marijuana over a martini on the weekend. That's how Democrats can get behind it. But so far in the cannabis community, we haven't seen that. We haven't seen them standing up for us. They're ashamed of us. They're afraid to mention anything about marijuana legalization, lest they get painted as soft on drugs. There's also the disappointment factor. A lot of us cannabis consumers were really excited in 2008, some of us for the first time, to come out for a presidential election because we had a transformative candidate. We had a candidate in Barack Obama who had written in his youth about using cocaine and marijuana, who had said when he was running for senator that the war on drugs is an utter failure and I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. Yes, he also went on to say he didn't support legalization, but at least he said he was supported decriminalization and looking at the war on drugs and changing it somehow. So we bought into that. We were all for the hope and the change. And the guy who maybe had some clue about the war on marijuana, the war on drugs, and how ineffective and futile and dangerous it is for society. But what did we get from Mr. I inhaled frequently? That was the point. We got something we call the chuckle. We went online. He asked us what we thought should be something that the administration should look at. We told him, legalize marijuana, legalize industrial hemp, end the raids on medical marijuana patients. And he chuckled at us. He laughed at us. He chastised the online audience for being a bunch of dopers or potheads. Right? That's what we've gotten from Democrats so far. And so far, they've been able to survive it because they've got that special little Rahm Emanuel strategy of, well, who else are you going to vote for? Right? Who else are you going to vote for? You're really going to vote for John McCain? You're going to vote for George W. Bush? Come on. Right? So many cannabis consumers bought into that. But coming around the bend here in 2010, when Prop 19 is on the ballot in California, and there's a bunch of Democrats on the ballot in California who are vocally opposed to Prop 19, how are those voters who are turning out to legalize marijuana going to react to those people? Are they going to issue them a review at the ballot box? Say, hey, Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, you didn't support marijuana legalization. Well, it we'll see. We'll see how it turns this out. But I'm really concerned here because Republicans are going to start to realize that they can get some younger voters, some minority voters, and some female voters if they steal the low-hanging fruit of marijuana legalization for their own. Republicans already have the frame of small government, personal responsibility, states' rights, and it wouldn't be very hard to take the marijuana legalization issue and start painting that as big government and nanny state and federal overreach. They've already got their conservative scions in William Buckley and Milton Friedman, whom they can look back at as always supporting an end to marijuana prohibition. They can point to the Democratic Congresses of the 1980s that created mandatory minimums and the last three Democratic presidents who supported decriminalization and inhaled to one extent or another, and yet the arrests kept increasing. Now, the GOP isn't there yet, but I'm telling you, they're watching this 2010 election, and if some of these Democrats fall and marijuana gets legalized at the same time, it's not going to take too long for some of them tea parties to take up the mantle of marijuana legalization. You heard it here first. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for Ganja John and Cannabis Carry. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live.
the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hang it out one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.